Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, my friends. Christmas Eve, 2023. 34 delightful degrees here in Kingman, Arizona, at the offices of Jim Hinckley's America, within spitting distance of legendary Route 66. Want to thank all of our sponsors for this year helping us get these programs going, some new projects we're working on. And so we want to give a shout out to supporters of our crowdfunding initiative on Patreon. And of course, Louie Keene at Urena's Fudge Company and General Store deserves a definite shout out. And we're glad that he has went well on the road to recovery. He's had a pretty damn rough year. Shout out, of course, to Connie Eccles there at the iconic Wagon Wheel Motel in Cuba, Missouri. And David Brenner at the Roadrunner Lodge in Tucumcari, New Mexico. And Angela Moreland, Cactus Inn Motel in McLean, Texas. And Steve, since we're going to be talking about road trips a little bit today, too, give a shout out to Stephen Disbrow and his wife at Route Trip USA. These are the ultimate bespoke road trip specialist for an adventure in the United States or Canada. Well, since it's Christmas Eve, I thought we would do something a little different today and do a little bit of Christmas programming. I got some Christmas stories, some little road trip inspiration, a whole lot of trivia. Like my pa said, better to fill the head with useless knowledge than no knowledge at all. And next week, well, we'll get back to something that resembles normal, at least normal in Jim Hinckley's America. Next week, we'll be talking to Connie Loveland, Tucumcari Main Street director. Let's start this off with a bit of obscure trivia. Good morning, Miss Maggie. Our trivia today, see if you can figure this one out. And we'll get you a free book. How does that sound? If you can figure this one out, we'll send you a free book. You won't get it for Christmas, but might be a good way to start the new year. So, one of the most iconic automobile brands can trace its origins to December 25th, 1878. Any guess what that company is? And how is it linked to Christmas in 1878? Okay. Now, let's do some road tripping here. Let's go to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Before Christmas was Christmas, it was known as the Bay Furnace and designated the town of Oneida. Well, beginning in 1869, there were immense furnace structures all along the shore of Lake Superior at this site. They smelted iron from the Iron Range. In 1870, the town received a post office designated O-N-O-T-A, Oneida. In the summer of 1877, almost the entire town burned to the ground. Business owners and most residents moved 15 miles west to Oneida Township, and they started a new town with the same name. Now, let's fast forward a few years. In 1939, Julius Thorson purchased most of the old town site and established a factory to manufacture Christmas items. The company was named Christmas Industries. The enterprise turned out to be rather short-lived. The factory burned down in 1940, but the name stayed on the plat maps. Now, Thorson had envisioned the factory was going to be simply Stage 1. Stage 2 was a Christmas-themed resort complex. Now, this is where the story gets kind of confusing. There was a beaver farmer named Walter that also lived on the old town site. He supplemented his income during Prohibition by bootlegging. And when Prohibition ended, he converted his home into a tavern and named it Beaver Park. As of 2020, the tavern was operating under the name of Foggy's. Now, in 1939, John Borbett and his sister, Evelyn, they raised a nightclub in Dollarville and rebuilt it near the old factory and called it the Naughty Club. A service station opened shortly afterwards, and then a family began renting cabins. And well, as the little complex was just down the road from Pictured Rock State Park, after the war, it became a destination. In July of 1966, the little village named Christmas received a postal substation, which officially designated it as a town. When the substation opened on July 8th, there was a rush from stamp collectors from all over the world to get the first day cancellation on stamps from Christmas. That November, when the Postal Service issued its 5-cent Christmas holiday stamp, there was a big ceremony with local and state politicians attending and an official dedication of the post office. Well, the Christmas holiday stamp with the Christmas town cancellation has become quite a collector's item. There's one for you. This one is an Arizona story. Nina Talbert and her husband, they arrived in Arizona sometime around 1932. And they bought land along U.S. 466 between Kingman and Chloride, Arizona. They began offering lots to attract potential landowners. And, to make a buck, they established Santa Claus, Arizona in 1937. The envisioned development never really materialized, but Santa Claus, with a Christmas-themed buildings where children could meet Santa Claus any day of the year, well, that became quite an attraction. Excuse me. When the post office application was approved, an opportunity to get a special postmark, well, that just simply added to the little village's fame. In 1949, the Talbots sold Santa Claus. The new owners expanded the complex, added a small train, modernized the restaurant, and renamed it the Christmas Tree Inn. Critic Duncan Hines described it as one of the best restaurants in the region. Got to tell you, that's not saying much. There was no place else between Kingman and Chloride. In 1950, science fiction writer Robert Heinlein wrote a short story about a sumptuous gourmet meal served in Santa Claus by Mrs. Claus. And local legend has it that the gentleman preferred blonde star Jane Russell through a dinner party there in 1954. Well, times change. And by the 1970s, business was in a slump. Maintenance on the buildings, such as the Three Pigs House, was being ignored. And there was a distinct evidence the end was near. But somehow, it remained open until 1995. A few years ago, the complex was leveled. Hey, for those of you just joining us, I want to get back to this trivia. If you'd like a free book, defaced with a signature from Jim Hinckley, here's our trivia question this morning. One of the most iconic automobile brands can trace its origins to December 25th, 1878. Any guess as to what that company is and how can it be linked to Christmas in 1878? Okay, now let's talk personalities. Joseph Christmas Ives. He was born on, you guessed it, December 25th. That was in 1829. He graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1852. And from 1853 to 1854, he served as a second lieutenant in the United States Army's topographical engineers, and he assisted Lieutenant Emil Weeks Whipple in the Pacific Railroad survey across northern Arizona along the 35th parallel. Then he started another expedition up the Colorado River from its mouth to a point near Las Vegas Wash. On this expedition, he returned to the Mojave villages near present-day Needles, California, re-outfitted, and then followed the Whipple survey party route back to Fort Defiance. And, well, along the way, he added information to that survey. Lieutenant Beale famous for his camel caravan in the late 1850s, he used that survey and followed the route when he established Beale's Road across northern Arizona. In the early 1880s, the Atlantic and Pacific Railroad began laying rails and stayed close to Beale's Road in most locations, except where the canyons or steep grades required them to find a different route. And, well, as they say, the rest is history. In 1913, the National Old Trails Road, Grand Canyon Santa Fe Road, followed the railroad. And guess what? In 1926, most of that was signed as US 66. How about them apples? Like I said, my pa always told me, better to fill your head with useless knowledge than no knowledge at all. Hey, now let's try some Christmas trivia. Christmas Day has been a federal holiday. Guess what year? 1870. In the early years of Christianity, Easter was the primary holiday worth celebrating. The consensus among church leaders was the celebration of Christ's resurrection should be the focus. The birth of Jesus was not celebrated or even really a topic of discussion. That would change in the 4th century when church leaders proclaimed the birth of Jesus as a holy event worthy celebration. Pope Julius I chose December 25th. It's believed that the date was selected as this had been a time of celebration in Rome for centuries. This was called the Feast of the Nativity, but it remained largely an event only celebrated in the area around Rome until about the 5th century. We like to hear a lot. It's become a great political catchphrase, if you will. Political propaganda that works well. War on Christmas. We hear that a lot. Well, there actually was a war on Christmas here in the United States at one point, or at least in the colonies. The early 17th century was a tumultuous period of Reformation in Europe. When Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces took over England in 1645, they vowed to rid England of decadence. And as part of that effort, they canceled Christmas. But when Charles II was restored to the throne, the holiday was again celebrated. The Pilgrims, who were English separatists that came to America in the 1620s, they were even more orthodox in their Puritan beliefs than Cromwell. So, from 1659 to 1681, the celebration of Christmas was outlawed in Boston. Anyone exhibiting the Christmas spirit was fined 5 shillings. Well, that was a polar opposite of Christmas celebration in Jamestown. During and after the American Revolution, however, English customs fell out of favor, including the celebration of Christmas. In the early 19th century, class conflict and turmoil often erupted during the months of winter, most severely in December or January. Here's a little bit of trivia for you. In 1828, the New York City Council instituted the city's first police force in response to a Christmas riot. In 1819, best-selling author Washington Irving wrote The Sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon, Gent. It was a series of stories about the celebration of Christmas in an English manor house. The sketches feature a squire who invited the peasants into his home for the holiday. In contrast to the problems faced in American and British society, the two groups mingled effortlessly. In Irving's mind, Christmas should be a peaceful, warm-hearted holiday that brought people together across lines of wealth or social status. Irving's fictitious celebrants enjoyed ancient customs, including the crowning of a Lord of Misrule. Irving's book invented tradition by implying that it described the true customs of the Christmas season. It was during this period that Charles Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol. The story's message about the importance of charity and goodwill towards all humankind struck a pretty powerful chord in the United States and England and their colonies. Wealthy members of society took the concept one step further, and by displaying kindness and generosity to workers, diffused a lot of the holiday season turmoil that had historically led to riots. Over the course of the next century, America, well, we built our own unique Christmas traditions. We wove them from the customs of immigrants. This included the decorating of trees and sending holiday cards and gift givings. And speaking of Christmas traditions, Rudolph, the most famous reindeer of all, he was the product of Robert L. May's imagination back in 1939. This copywriter wrote a poem about the reindeer as a sales campaign to help lure customers into the Montgomery Ward department stores. How about them apples? Here's another one for you. The Salvation Army's been sending Santa Claus-clad donation collectors into the streets since at least the 1890s. How about Christmas tree decorations? Well, we can trace that back to Germany in the Middle Ages. And other European settlers popularized Christmas trees in America by the early 19th century. And a New York woodsman named Mark Carr, he's credited with opening the first Christmas tree lot in the United States back in 1851. Here's one for you. This may be hard to imagine today, but the Charlie Brown Christmas special inspired by Charles Schulz's Peanuts comic strip, well, CBS executives initially rejected that program. But when it finally aired on December 9th, 1965, half of all U.S. TV sets were tuned to the broadcast. And Yule logs. Well, of course, they were part of ancient winter solstice celebrations. But again, Americans, they had their own slant. They turned the wood burning into must-see TV. This was back in 1966. WPIX in New York City aired a continuous 17-hour loop of a fireplace along with holiday music. That led to eventual production, and well, 20 years now, these programs have been on television. Candy canes are the number one selling candy during December. They date to 1670 in Germany. The red and white peppermint sticks arrived stateside in, well, about 1847. A German-Swedish immigrant, a candy maker in Wooster, Ohio. We can give him credit for that one. And then, of course, an automated candy cane making machine was invented a few years after that. How about eggnog? The origin of eggnog is posset, a drink made with hot curdled milk mixed with ale or wine. We first find this back around medieval England. But American colonists, they get the credit for making it popular, adding rum. The story is that even George Washington had a special recipe for eggnog. How about the Christmas card? Any ideas? Well, that debuted in 1843 in England with a simple message. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you. Credit for the popularity of the mailed winter holiday greeting. Well, that was the brainchild of Kansas City-based Hall Brothers. We know them today as Hallmark. They created a folded card sold with an envelope in 1915. Well, here's another one for you. Thomas Edison's partner and friend, Edward Hibbard Johnson, he had a bright idea. Let's replace candles on Christmas trees by stringing bulbs. That was in 1882, New York City. So we can give him credit for the electric Christmas tree lights. How about the tradition of kids on Santa's lap? Well, we can go back to about 1890 on that one. James Edgar of Brookton, Massachusetts, dressed as Santa Claus and hatched up the idea as a marketing gimmick for his dry goods store. Well, we got time for at least one more here, or two. Reading The Night Before Christmas by poet Clement Moore. Now, that's an American tradition. Historians believe it was written on Christmas Eve of 1822. According to the United States Library of Congress, Clement, a professor at the General Theological Seminary in Manhattan, was embarrassed by the work, which was made public without his knowledge in December of 1823. I want to share something, one more, a little something special for you. And I promised to share with you a little personal story about my epic road trip in 1976. Darkly comedic that it is, but let me do this first. This is a little story from the Imperial War Museum. Late on Christmas Eve, 1914, men of the British Expeditionary Force heard German troops in the trenches opposite singing carols and patriotic songs. They saw lanterns and fir trees along the trenches. The soldiers began shouting between the trenches. And, well, the following day, British and German soldiers met in no man's land. They exchanged gifts, took photographs, and even played impromptu games of ball. My friends, you know, it's Christmas season, and I hope we can keep that in mind and maybe keep it alive for the whole year. Let's be very careful coming weeks and coming months and not let ourselves be pitted against each other. Let's find ways that we can work together and, make this a little bit better place for all of us. My thought for the day. Please feel free to chime in here at any point in this story and share your holiday memories and stories. You can either call in or type it in here as a message. Now, my epic road trip of 1976, my memory of Kingman. My pa and I had made a trip from Michigan in the summer of 1976. The family was going to relocate back to Arizona. Now, I had lived in Michigan as a kid, but Arizona was my home. I really had become eager to get back. And I got out of school in Michigan. I wasn't happy there. Just didn't enjoy it at all. So I took a big road trip with my dad in the summer of 76. And we went out here to Kingman, getting things ready for the relocation back out here to Arizona. They were going to move back out to Arizona. My pa made me a deal I couldn't refuse. He was really good at cheap labor. He would pay me a token amount and help set me up with an apartment or a place here in Kingman if I'd help make the move. So we made the trip out in the summer of 76, got everything set. We went back to Michigan, picked up my ma and my sister, and moved them out to Kingman. My pa and I went back to Michigan, and we sold the store and sold the house, and My pa did what he usually did. He got himself a good truck out of the junkyard. It was an old Goodwill truck, about a 1960-something Ford, 62, 63 Ford box truck. And he rebuilt the motor, put a clutch in it, went through the brakes, total rust bucket. And then we had a 53 Chevy truck. He built a tow bar, put that on the back. We loaded that 53 Chevy pickup. And in mid-December, we set out for Arizona. Well, along Route 66 out by Gallup, New Mexico, we had an accident. Pretty good one, actually. The tow bar broke loose, and the 53 Chevy went out to pass the Ford. And I don't know how my dad kept it upright, but we went off the road down through the brush and through a barbed wire fence. Well, I bounced my head off the dashboard, broke one lens in my glasses, put a goose egg on my head, and my pa was known for, get her done. And that's what we did. He got out of the truck, unhooked the tow bar, disconnected it. We made sure the Chevy would run. The front fender was pretty smashed up, pried the fender away from the wheel, and he jumped in the big Ford truck and said, "Follow me to Gallup." Well, I can only see out of one eye because I broke my glasses and got a pounding headache, and there goes my dad. So I jumped in the old 53 Chevy, and to the best of my ability, I followed him back to Gallup. The old Chevy, something was broken bad. I couldn't get any speed. She was overloaded. It was part of it. But we ended up in Gallup. This was a few days before Christmas. I don't remember the exact day, sometime around the 19th, 20th, maybe even the 18th. And got a motel room. After we got a motel room and found a garage that would work on the Chevy, then my dad took me to the hospital. Turned out I had a slight concussion. I ended up with about 4 or 5 stitches in my head and glass lenses in the eyeglasses at that time. And my dad put my glasses back together with the pieces on that one lens. I had almost a perfect peace sign in one lens of my glasses. And he had made arrangements for the Chevy to be fixed, headlight replaced, and the front end repaired so it would steer. And then the next day, he gave me a few bucks. He paid up the motel room, paid the garage in advance, gave me a handful of money for gas and expenses, got in the Ford, and headed for Kingman. He says, "I'll see you there and in about a week." Well, I picked up the Chevy a few days later, and they were never fast trucks to begin with. And like I say, my dad had put racks on the back, and that truck was loaded to the hilt. And it was quite an adventure. Still an old 53 Chevy 6-volt electrical system. Had a flat tire I had to change, a few other things. And I made it to Holbrook before snow shut things down. Not very much of a drive. And after a couple days of waiting it out in Holbrook, I got to the road. And I do remember that was a cold morning. A guy told me it was one of the coldest mornings they'd had at Holbrook in a long time. It was just 5 below 0 when I set out with that old Chevy. And I got her into Kingman, followed Route 66 as much as I could, and that's about all we had. I-40 was being built, but it was still 66, and didn't pay much attention to the date, but it turns out I got into Kingman on Christmas Eve Day, 1976. A bit worse for wear, but I got here. My friends, I'm so grateful that you could join me this day. And I do hope that you have a delightful and memorable Christmas season with your family and friends. And, got a new year of adventure. Excuse me. Looming on the horizon. Well, let's see. Well, Miss Maggie Mays made some guesses for our trivia question. My question is, Maggie, which one do you think it is? Chevrolet, Ford, or Packard? I'll give you a minute to think about that. Miss Cheryl, I'm sure glad you joined us. Keith and everyone who was with us this morning. Next week, like I say, we're going to be talking to Connie Loveland out Tucumcari Main Street. Other programs, we were going to have Aunt Angie Patarik with us on January 7th to talk about her Route 66 information station, but she's got surgery a couple days before that, so she's asked to reschedule that for February 4th. So I'm going to have to drum up a guest for January 7th. January 14th, we're going to talk with Casey Claypool of Docks off 66 in Girard, Illinois. She's got quite an adventure turning an old, long-closed pharmacy in a small, faded town into a destination. I think you're going to find that interesting. And then we had to reschedule Carrie Barrick. Reese Martin filled in for her last program. But Carrie from Oklahoma Department of Commerce, the Centennial Commission, and the Oklahoma Route 66 Association, she'll join us on the 28th. She had been dealing with a COVID situation. Well, it looks like Maggie May has got the answer here. It is Chevrolet. Our trivia question this morning was, one of the most iconic automobile brands can trace its origins to December 25th, 1878. Any guesses what the company is and how it linked to Christmas in 1878? Well, the answer is Louis Chevrolet was born in Switzerland in 1878. See, now if you really want to stir up some hate and discontent at a car show, let people know that Chevrolet is actually an import. Anyway, Miss Maggie, I'll get that out to you. And Miss Cheryl, thank you for the holiday greetings. Does anyone have any questions or stories they want to share this morning or any input before we button this thing up and get on the road? Hey, one more thing I better shout out to. As with everything I do, it's a tad bit primitive, but I'm confident we're going to get it better. I've neglected the YouTube channel for a long time, but I decided, and I put it off long enough, I've invested in a GoPro, and I started on the learning curve about using that and video editing. So adding to my career, if you will, I shared a posting this morning on the James Hinckley Facebook page, a video I made yesterday, part one of an adventure in Coyote Pass. Went out in search of remnants of US 466, a 1913 highway, and the 19th century, mid-19th century Mojave Prescott Road. And it came out fairly well, but it's part one, and see what you think. I'd sure like to hear your input on that as well as this program. My friends, have a really wonderful Christmas and holiday season. And I didn't think so, Maggie, but you know, you can have some fun with that, letting people know that Chevy's an import, because technically Chevy is an import. Not the car, but Louis Chevrolet was an import. Important to clarify that before you get yourself into deep trouble. Louis Chevrolet was and his brothers, Arthur and Gaston, they were fascinating folks. Louis Chevrolet started actually out with bicycles. He started working in a bicycle repair shop, became really famous as a bicycle racer, and then started manufacturing bicycles under the Frontenac name. And of course, for those who are familiar with the Chevrolet story, after he lost control of Chevrolet and the use of his name, William Durant took over the company. Louis Chevrolet went on to other projects and initiatives, and one was manufacturing high-performance automobile parts under the name Frontenac. Yeah, Oldsmobile's a challenge. We'll do something on that, too, sometime. My friends, thank you so much for joining us today, and I do hope you enjoyed this. And if you'd like to be a guest here on Coffee with Jim, you got something to promote, something to talk about, an event, well, send me a note. See if we can make that happen. And if you got comments on the program or suggestions on something we should talk about here, we'll send that along as well. This will be archived on Spotify. When I publish it today, it'll be on Spotify, major podcast channels. It'll also be on our website, jimhinckleysamerica.com, and should be up on our YouTube channel as well here pretty quick. So, with that said, my friends, I will bid you adios, and Joe and Woody and the boys of the Road Crew, roadcrew66.com.
Say hello to a new friend.
Bye, adios, mi amigos. Happy New Year, Miss Maggie. Got one more program.
In the mysteries of
Sunday the 31st.
Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America.
Ooh, temperatures are kind of dropping here a bit. 32 degrees. Until next week, my friends. Adios.